Today's sponsor is Sonos. Sonos is offering the listeners of Mr. Robot 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. This offer is available for a limited time only and cannot be combined with other discounts or promotions. Use the promo code ROBOT10, that's capital ROBOT10, at Sonos.com to receive this offer.
Every day we change the world. But to change the world in a way that means anything, it's slow, it's methodical.
Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficial podcast for Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just got done watching Season 3, Episode 9, titled Episode 3.8 _ Stage 3.torrent. Yep. I think the explanation of this is pretty obvious. This title does not need much of an explanation. I don't know, like we've said in the past, if the extension of this name has any bearing on the episode itself. Torrent files are... I don't know how to. They're peer-to-peer downloadable media stuff.
Your torrents are kind of cool at the time because they're one of the things that flipped the paradigm of the internet on its head. Usually you had a server that clients would connect to, and the one server, everyone got the same bits and they download off there. This where everyone has the file, a large amount of people have the file, and they give you bits and pieces of what they have. To get number one, make it more anonymous to download, and that's why like places like the Pirate Bay still exist, because they don't host copyrighted content.
They host
the links to distributed files that have the copyrighted content. There's a interesting email we got that kind of has an explanation for it. Do you want me to just get right in there right now?
Yeah, let's hear it.
So V wrote, "The episode's .torrent file name extension had me thinking about the new peer-to-peer relationship seen throughout the episode. Almost all the characters are gaining new peers, forming new power dynamics, and establishing new bonds. For example, Elliot summons Irving and White Rose in a complete role reversal. Elliot assists Angela in her mental instability, another role reversal. Darlene steps up to Elliot, becoming an equal partner in the recovery effort. Darlene and Dom hook up, and more importantly, Dom decides to support F Society's proposed recovery effort. Grant and White Rose hook up, and more importantly, resolve to eliminate Elliot. Mr. Robot and Tyrell have a vaguely sexual tussle, which Price comments on. Mr. Robot and Tyrell both come to terms with White Rose's manipulation, and most importantly, Elliot and Mr. Robot start to work together via the message in the mirror." So I think some of that is compelling, that you have a traditional top-down structure, White Rose pushing things down and Price pushing things down to a more peer-to-peer instead of authoritative server. You've got people on the margins working together towards a common purpose. And the question is, will that be more powerful than Dark Army and the remnants of E-Corp going forward?
I certainly see on the internet that it has been more powerful than your, let's say, law enforcement and copyright law and all those things combined.
Yeah.
So potentially,
it's funny because there was a time where I thought that like it was a done deal that the copyright holders would essentially win control of the internet because, after Napster went down and Nutella and all the other ones, it's like, how in the world can you, and then you had these, the torrents and
the LimeWires and
you had, but BitTorrent's kind of been the last stop. They continue to attack and try to take down like the Pirate Bay and different reactors, but it's just hard to because they're everywhere. Everywhere.
I kind of read this, I guess, in a different way, which is that we are getting bits and pieces of the information that
which individually
form
are useless.
The whole picture. And we don't quite have all of the bits yet. We're in the process of, figuring it all out, but I think there are some things happening in this episode that we don't quite understand yet.
I like that interpretation too, because there's nothing more frustrating than having 99.9% of the torrent and you're missing the last bit and you can't do anything with it
and
until
there
you get
are
it
zero
all.
Seeds and right. you're like, fuck, I'm right. never gonna get this.
Right, yeah. So that's kind of, and I gotta say, this is the first episode of Mr. Robot that I'm not quite sure about.
Okay.
But I'm willing to extend it to benefit of the doubt, and all the things that I have problems with are intentional traps that I'm falling into as a watcher.
I think
But man, there's just a couple things where, like, even buying that, I have to assign a level of gullibility that I didn't previously think was possible for people like Darlene or Elliot. Like, Elliot easily compromising the entire Dark Army network seems like utter horseshit. Maybe Dark Army setting a trap for him. Why does Elliot think, why does Elliot not assume that? Because it just, it did.
How many levels deep do you go?
I don't know,
man. Before you say, yep, this is the one.
I don't know, but like, didn't it strike you as odd that this formidable hacker network with like a paramilitary structure and like all these safeguards and securities could be so easily penetrated and completely owned? Not just a section, a compartment.
Yeah, I mean,
especially since they're opening it from like a, like what's presumed is a secure like terminal that would be very hard to like hack the entire network from. This is like their sandbox where they open known, perhaps compromised or threatening material. So like it would be especially hardened.
Yeah, we need to talk about that scene, I guess, in particular a little bit deeper, because I read the technical director, I think, or whoever, whatever he is, technical consultant on
that
this.
That core guy, isn't that his name?
No, I think it's a different guy who's like the security consultant or whatever, who broke this attack down, and it was more complicated than I thought
but
at first.
But they didn't communicate that very well to us then.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to communicate, though.
Right.
I think, unless you just have, you know, Elliot narrate it.
Yeah.
Just voiceover.
Yeah.
Do it. But for the most part, I really liked this episode. I thought it started off shaky, actually. I don't quite understand what grip Angela has on Philip Price from the jump. From the first moment he sees her, there's something about her. And they didn't convince me of that.
And that's something I think we are, is certainly, that's an ace up. I don't know why I want to go Sam Raimi. Sam Esmail.
Because of Rami Malek, yeah.
Yeah,
You got the Sam, you got the Rami.
Right.
Tie in, yeah.
I think there's, and the other thing is I thought that the stuff between Darlene and Angela was pretty inept, too. Darlene and Dom, sorry.
You did?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty.
Really?
But I think there's maybe more to that going on. But I don't know. From what, like, I obviously we'll
talk
about
it. Yeah, I'm curious which
it.
Parts. We will get there, for sure.
Yeah, but this is the first episode this entire season where I was kind of like, does this actually feel organically what would happen from these events and that these people would actually do these things?
Yeah. It is kind of everything that I hoped we would start to see at the end of this season, which is the turnaround from Elliot trying to push forward this agenda on E-Corp to Elliot combating White Rose openly.
Yeah, which is going to be, I mean, that's the labs we talked. That's like a hard, almost unimaginable thing to set out to do. There's a couple of other things that I just want. Like, for a fact, the fact that this is a parallel time structure that, like,
it gets twisty, yeah.
All of the things that happen with Mr. Robot and Tyrell, you're supposed to understand, happened the day before Elliot wakes up to see they own the FBI. And, like, all these storylines run parallel concurrently. But then, like, essentially at the end of the episode with Mr. Robot is the beginning of the episode for Elliot. Mm-hmm. And that was very confusing the first time I watched it. But I feel like it tracks pretty cleanly.
Yeah.
But there's nothing they use to really let you know those things are happening in a timey-wimey sense, other than there's no way that Elliot and Mr. Robot can be at two places at the same time.
Sure. And I mean, I definitely caught on to what they were trying to do, I think, unless you're saying there's something deeper here. But I think the way they played it, yeah, it's subtle, but it definitely worked for me as far as understanding where we were in the time loop here.
Okay. Well, let's just talk about the episode then. Before we get to the episode, housekeeping, the Mary Culkin Keatmas rages on. This is our annual Christmas celebration for our club members. Fortunately, you got to be a member of the club to participate, but we just did a whole week of Jack Frost. We're ready to kick off a week of live watching and podcasting. Home Alone, the holiday favorite. Next week is Batman Forever. Or no, not Batman Forever, sorry.
Returns.
Batman Returns. Yeah. Last of the Burton Batmans.
Last of the Keaton Batmans.
Last of the Keaton Batmans. Last of the Christmas Batmans.
True.
There's never been another Christmas Batman. So we're doing that, and there's a super surprise present for you around Christmas Day, Christmas Eve, that's coming out as well. As far as our non-club stuff, we just did a review of The Disaster Artist.
Yeah.
It was about the making of the movie The Room, the one of the worst movies of all time. It was very entertaining. Jim and I had a lot of fun watching it. And next week, oh boy, I've been waiting for this for 2 years. The Last Jedi, the new Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be having a first run look at that out Thursday night. Of course, we also have coverage of The Walking Dead. We got coverage of Mr. Robot and all the other stuff we do. But yeah, check it all out. It's all going down at baldmove.com.
Okay. We start off with a flashback. Gideon's trying to sell E-Corp on using them as their technology security vendor. He's failing until Angela comes in and manages to inexplicably enchant Philip. I don't quite understand this. Maybe you'll be able to explain it to me. After the meeting, he tells Terry, hey, you got to hire these people, despite his protests. And then Tyrell also has protests and tries to convince him that he could build this security team internally. But Philip doesn't even know his name. Like, he doesn't even consider Tyrell anything, which makes me question why the hell is Tyrell there in the first place.
Yeah. And
why
also,
not just bring in Terry?
The way they play Tyrell is his accent is thicker.
Yeah, yeah.
Like this is clearly further back in the past where he was trying to establish himself. And I like that they added that little note to let you know that this has, you know, happened, you know, pretty far in the past. If Gideon coming back to life didn't get you,
right?
Philip is intrigued by Angela, but this actually to me makes a lot of season two make more sense. That this was something like, I don't, you know, we've got some theories to talk about in the feedback. I know we're supposed to be intrigued by this and notice it and also not have the answer. Mm-hmm. So this stuff, I'm fine. Like, this is Raimi be like, oh yeah, this is new information that you're supposed to recontextualize, and that's okay. So yeah. I'm not bothered by it because I assume there'll be a satisfying answer to this question.
Yeah, I hope so. Because it is perplexing me.
I love they've really nailed the scene transition, the title transitions. Like, I really like that heroic shot of Tyrell in front of the All Safe building.
Yeah, and I read it as like the reverse shot of what we saw in that one shotter.
Yeah,
where Angela's hacking into the place where they keep their signing code.
Right. The hardware validation.
I can't remember the exact acronym.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that shot where you kind of see half of her in that room and half of the crowd rioting down below, I thought that was super awesome.
Right.
Kind of as a reverse angle of that.
Yeah.
From the past.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting because we talked about how that could be like the mass of humanity that is unaware of the things that are happening, like just literally on the other side, whereas this is like, you know, paints him as like this, like, where he begins his like godlike delusions, maybe.
Yeah, and as naive as he begins this episode before Mr. Robot gets on the right path and clues him in.
Right. Boy, I forgot what a massive asshole Terry was.
Yeah. No,
him
he's
ordering
the worst.
Angela around like she's a secretary or.
Uh huh.
Yeah. Just a massive tool.
Sure is. Then we go back to the present day, and Tyrell is dropped off at his home where he grieves for his family. Apparently, there are no real consequences, and he's being treated as a hero, and he's the CTO.
I mean, he is under some interesting restrictions. No international travel.
Yeah.
You have to alert the bureau if you're leaving the city. Like, probably some of that's
can't
for
be
his
a
quote
CTO
unquote
of a major corporation, not on the list.
Some of that's probably for his own protection, but, like, you know, that's freedom of travel is one of the things we like about America, right? There's
sure.
No papers, please, at the border. So it's almost like he's on a little bit of probation or parole.
Yeah, definitely.
But again, it might be for his own protection. I don't know.
I guess. So it's not that the powers that be have bought this excuse, hook, line, and sinker. It's that Santiago has pulled the strings to let him free, right?
Well, who are the powers that be?
Santiago, the FBI, the people who have captured him at this point.
I think that
fucking presidents, as White Rose.
Yeah,
would say.
I think all of society has bought the official story, including, like, obviously Santiago knows the truth, but like the official story has been put out, and yeah, he was held hostage, and
mm-hmm.
he was forced to do these unspeakable things, and
maybe
even thwarted the
later?
Terrorist attack in New York City, and couldn't finish stop the others. So
he's with the FBI for 3 weeks, yeah?
Where are you getting the 3 weeks?
Because Elliot spent 3 weeks after.
Yeah, right. It's at least, yeah. Attacks. It's at least that long.
And they captured him on the day of the attacks. He's now being released for the first time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's my thought.
Okay.
So Elliot snaps back from being Mr. Robot, and he sees a message that Mr. Robot left for him saying they own the FBI, written in soap on his mirror. He realizes it's the Dark Army, and he questions what Mr. Robot got up to while he was out of it. And then we see what Mr. Robot did, which consisted of going to Tyrell's house to confront him over the 71 attacks. He pushes Tyrell a little too far when he mentions his wife, and Tyrell's about to beat him senseless when Philip rings the doorbell.
Okay. What do you make of all the things that were open on Elliot's computer? It looked like...
So there's a CTO.
It looks like the information about Tyrell's release. There is Trenton's email. And then there's also documentation about the FBI Sentinel system. And
right.
In particular, it looks like some kind of change log talking about new features, about examining indexing and looking up things for large cases.
I think this is Mr. Robot just... looking for the vulnerability.
Yeah, doing the legwork to try to... He knows he needs to get in the Sentinel system to get the keys, and this is him beginning that homework.
Right. I don't think he's figured anything out. He doesn't have the time to. My favorite line maybe in the entire series so far is when Tyrell... Mr. Robot calls Tyrell a puppet, and he says, "Nope, no puppet, no puppet, you're a puppet."
Yeah, I like that too. A lot of people didn't.
It's so like... childishly defensive.
Do you know the origin of this?
No.
Oh my God. That was literally what Donald Trump said in response to Hillary Clinton during one of the presidential debates.
Yeah. Okay. That makes total sense now.
Right.
No puppet. No puppet. You're the puppet.
Right. And a lot of people are like, that took me out of the episode. But I think.
Okay. I didn't know that. So it didn't take me out.
And I appreciate, because obviously, Sam Esmail's politics do not align with Donald Trump.
Sure.
I think the point is he's making is if this grabs you as like a childish or immature or poorly written thing to say, how much more so than that's the only thing our president could think of to retort to someone accusing him of being a puppet of Russia.
Right.
Like if this is poorly written dialogue and dumb and childish, well, it actually happened. Deal with it.
That's why I love it, because of how ridiculous of a line it
is. Right. And like I said, when I was watching that debate live, I was like, my head exploded. Like, how the fuck can you come back from that? And then he's the president now, I mentioned. So I like that too. But there's a lot of people on the internet that don't like the parallels that Esmail is drawing to current events, apparently.
I think if I had known that, I would have had a more reflexive negative reaction toward it.
But why?
Because I didn't like the stuff that they did in the Mar-a-Lago scenes about, you know, the owner with his hanging brain and all that. I was like, it's a little too much.
Well, hanging brain was because I thought there's no way that's something that White Rose would. That's that kind of low, quote unquote, locker room talk would be something that White Rose would be engaging in.
Yeah, I didn't like it from the perspective of it. Feels a little too commentary-ish in a show that is more subtle than that.
Huh.
It feels a little too overt.
Huh. I don't know that I would describe Mr. Robot as subtle. It seems pretty in-your-face about its themes and what its politics.
But it usually uses themes and just, like, hints at those kind of things. Yeah. Or not even hints. I mean, it smashes you in the face with themes, but it doesn't come outright and say, hey, Donald Trump's a real fuck-up, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I like start to draw the line, as in like this is not interesting.
What's the subtle way to make that point?
I don't know, but it's not that in my mind.
Luckily,
I don't have to make that.
Was he going to kill Elliot here? Because he gets the blue gloves out. I think he's just going to rough up Elliot.
I think
he's
going to beat him to as much as he can. Yeah.
I thought that he was going to commit murder.
He might.
Why else do you put on the?
Although he didn't kill those bums. Those bums came back for more.
Did he?
So
put on gloves to beat up the bums?
Yeah.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure about that.
Yeah, that's why the gloves were so ominous when I saw him go to the drawer and open it and here's the latex.
Gloves.
Yeah.
And, you know, to be fair, Mr. Robot's wearing a coat that just came out of the garbage, so...
That's true.
Maybe he just got confused.
Yeah.
But here's a perfect example of the problem I have with this episode is it makes... It makes Tyrell come across as ignorant, naive, and kind of dumb. like the fact that he thinks, like he says stuff that I earned this freedom. It's the least they could do versus Mr. Robot thinking, yeah. What, like, how do you not see that you've made yourself beholden to them? That you are now, they've added you to this collection of puppets that they have.
Yeah, I think that's his role, to be a little naive. I mean, he's been a little naive all along, right? With the worshiping Elliot as a god.
It's just weird. So, like, one of these days I'm going to have to go back and watch season one. But, like, to me, his arc was, well, maybe that's true. Because if his arc was to be the anti-Elliot, then Elliot in his way and Mr. Robot in his way was just as naive because they thought they were the ones pulling the strings, and it turns out they were doing the bidding of much more powerful connected people. So
yeah.
Maybe Tyrell is just not woke up as fast.
I think that's it, yeah.
But, like, you know, until...
Like, Elliot is miles ahead,
until
as Darlene would say.
Elliot was just this naive and deluded up until the point that the 71 buildings fell down.
Right.
So I guess that's a fair point.
Okay. We move on to the old F-Society HQ, where Elliot shows Trenton's email to Darlene, and he decides he's going to go after the Keylogger files, but Darlene knows it's an impenetrable fortress. He will never get into Sentinel. And she offers to help out by exploiting her FBI contact, which we know as Dom.
Exploit.
Yeah.
Indeed. She's going to probe her vulnerabilities.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. There's not a ton to say about this until we get to the actual meat of it.
Yep.
So I'm going to move on to Irving flirting with a woman while they test drive one of his cars. The car stops running, and Elliot shows up. And he demands that Irving set a meet with White Rose to discuss Stage 3, a heretofore unmentioned Stage 3.
This is I love this because, number one, it's paying Irving back with his own coin. Like, hey, thanks for showing me that cool OnStar trick. Now it's going to happen to you.
I thought he had hacked the car. I'm kind of surprised that he didn't, like, hack the onboard computer of the car.
I thought so, too, but when he said OnStar, yeah. I'm like, oh, he just did the same thing that he watched Irving do. So, yep. Okay, that makes sense.
And it's a lot easier. The human engineering, social engineering stuff.
Can you tape over a Bluetooth mic and have it do that? I kind of want to do a Mythbuster-style test because it seems like maybe you could, but he only taped over one part of the microphone grill.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe the important part?
Maybe. But, I mean, obviously the point of what they're trying to do is they're trying to make sure that you couldn't hack this vehicle with an always-on microphone and use it as a listening device.
Yeah. Or maybe even that OnStar themselves is listening at that point.
Ah, true, true.
Because I think they would, right?
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
If you report, someone's stolen this car or whatever, you'd start listening in.
That makes a lot of sense. And also exploiting the fact that he is speaking with certainty about the Stage 3 that he knows Irving doesn't know about, but he also knows that Irving would be probably afraid to fuck up with something enough to kick it up the chain of command.
For sure.
This is a really good hack. I like this part. I thought this was clever.
Yeah. how do you feel about Irving's flirting here?
Was he flirting? Was he just being this? I thought he was
come on.
Hmm.
No, he's talking about, oh, I want to feel you. Push that pedal down.
Oh.
Yeah, he's definitely flirting.
I thought he was just trying to exploit her, like, you know, in fact, he's just upselling her on a car.
I think he's doing both, yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah, if he can get her into that car and get himself into her pants.
His used car game is strong. You really? I didn't get that with Irving.
I think that's what old Irv's up to, yeah.
I think old Irv is trying to get back to his novel. Where he can talk about the...
He's got to have stories for that novel. I'm
that's
just
true.
Saying.
You got to write what you know, right?
Yep. All right, Darlene meets Dom in a bar where she tries to clone the chip on her badge with a reader hidden in her bag, and it does not work, which is kind of cool to see a hack that just goes wrong.
Right,
it doesn't
yeah.
work.
Right. Didn't get close enough or whatever.
Yeah, we so rarely see that.
There's something off about this whole scene. And the first time I watched it, I noticed it, but I kind of relaxed because I'm like, well, you think Darlene's trying to play Dom, but maybe Dom's also trying to play Darlene a little bit. And second and third time I watched it, like, there was a little bit of that where I'm still not quite sure what is going on, but it seems like two women making very amateur and unprofessional attempts to hit on each other, and either one of them should have been having alarm bells the whole time. And the only thing that makes sense is if Dom deliberately thought that Darlene would try to do something like this, so she lured her back to her, because it was her idea to keep buying the drinks and like do all this stuff. And then, but it makes Darlene's like that. If that's that bails out Dom, because then now Dom's the one that's caught this person and got leverage over her, but makes Darlene look stupid, because the whole time, you know, Dom's saying things like, oh man, I have a really hard time sleeping. I don't sleep very much. I'm a light sleeper. And Darlene, as soon as she fucks her to sleep, gets up and gets busted. And like, I just thought a lot of this came across as very amateur hour. Like, a savvy FBI agent should see a criminal informant trying to work them. And the criminal informant should probably see that FBI might be trying to take... I don't know. You didn't think that anything was off about their...
No, I didn't.
This quote-unquote seduction?
I didn't feel that, and I... Or if I did, I understood it in the moment, because... Her first attempt fails, and she's essentially calling an audible, right?
She gets increasingly desperate. Like, yeah. She gets increasingly desperate.
Right. She calls the audible of, well, I guess I got to hit on her and get in her apartment so I can get the badge. And then, oh, shit, she put it in the safe. Now I got to go all the way through with this thing.
Right.
And maybe get the badge when she's asleep. And,
right.
Yeah, so one thing leads to another in a way that I thought was plausible.
I don't know. It just felt like a little loosely written.
I think the one thing that I wish they had is a better reason for Darlene to go to Dom. Like, if she had come up with an excuse.
I thought the Dark Army.
Shit has changed.
I thought the reason to meet, like, I do have information about the Dark Army and they scare me and all, like, I thought that was okay.
But I wish she had like, an excuse, like, the Dark Army showed up at my door or, like, if the Dark Army shows up at your door, you're dead.
Right.
If you see Leon and he's there to kill you, you're done.
Right.
But I wish she had, like, something that actually scared her, not just the general fear.
Yeah. And then, you know, like, yeah, obviously I'm not an expert on early to mid-20s lesbian sting operations or confidence scams. So, like, I don't know what a successful one looks like. It just felt like... As far as the seduction game, Darlene was, I don't know why she would appeal to what I know of Dom, and also I don't know why when Dom was kind of like roping in Darlene, which is what I think it happened to Darlene was. I guess Darlene was desperate. Again, it just felt a little thinly written, and I didn't, the whole situation I wasn't buying on any real level.
Okay. Angela is waiting on Elliot's stoop to show him the article about Tyrell becoming CTO as proof that things are returning to normal. And she becomes angry when Elliot doesn't believe her, and then paranoid when a van pulls up, so they move the conversation inside. Boy,
man.
Angela.
You still think this configuration Angela is cool?
I mean, it's not something that I, like, really, really wanted to see.
She's
just cooler than what she was,
she's
which was
into
nothing.
Howard Hughes. Like,
Yeah, she's lost her damn mind.
Why?
Because she believed in something that she still believes in something. She has to believe in this thing because of the horrible thing she's done in service of it.
So have you seen any of the theories about, like, that maybe White Rose's objective is more like a psychological manipulation, like a Manchurian candidate style brainwashing, or something along the lines of like a brainwashing, that it's not like her technology is not so much rewriting history or configuring probabilities, but it's something about actually hacking people. And that, like, this increasingly deranged Angela thing's going off as evidence of the aftermath of that.
I don't know. That I would need to, like, read some support of that.
I just don't, like, I see no evidence of Angela being, like, having this kind of, like, mental breakdown inside of her.
It definitely happened suddenly. And I guess the reasons that I go with it is because of that she's had to betray Elliot. She's had to
kill
people.
This is also what happened to Elliot. like kind of right, like he had a similar mental breakdown at a much earlier age.
Yeah, with the window incident.
Sure. Yeah, so like there's definitely parallels there. It's just I don't know, like the way she's playing it is like this infantile, wide-eyed conspiracy theorist, like padding around. Like she's just turned into a mid-20s blonde Howard Hughes.
Yeah, she's like had a mental break.
I wanted to see her feet so I could see if she's wearing Kleenex boxes.
Uh huh.
You know.
Yeah.
Like with the robe and everything, and her little fortress of cat postertude, like
she basically is, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like I feel like this is a regression for her character, and I'm not totally on board with it, but I'm willing to be patient to see where Sam's going.
Yeah, and I'm curious exactly who is pulling up and for what purpose at the end of this, but we'll talk about it.
Minor tot dab
yeah.
update, which again is the scale that I created as a shorthand to refer to things that don't make sense in the context of socio political economic status of the world. Curfew buses, curfew shuttles. Who is in the market for that? Like, and how is that different than
like,
a
oh,
taxi?
Shit, it's 8:55.
How is that different from a taxi or an Uber or anything? Like
it's free.
It's
a public service. I assume. Sure.
It's a curfew shuttle. So it's paid for by the government to just make sure people are home.
I mean, that's the least you can do. If you're telling people, look, you got to be home at 9 o'clock, the least you can do is provide a car to get you there.
The least you can do is just start whomping ass at 9:01. Like, you know?
Okay, fair.
Like make whips out of electric cords and drive the civilians like the cattle they are. Like,
the least you can do in a kinder, gentler military state.
It's so weird, like, to be branded a curfew shuttle. Because, yeah, it does seem like a government initiative, but it's like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you just deputize? Maybe are they government? Because, like, if you're driving to get people home by curfew, by definition, you will be violating curfew. So are these Homeland Security pukes they're doing this?
Oh, they're just rounding them up, throwing them in the tennis court?
Yeah, it's a shuttle.
Right.
But it's actually more of like a paddy wagon.
Yep.
Ah, interesting.
It could be. Could be.
I don't know. It little bothered me.
I feel like they got it wrong, though. You need to deputize everyone, 1984 style. Like,
yeah.
If you see someone out past curfew...
You see something, call something. Yeah,
yeah,
see someone, call someone. Yeah.
Okay, Darlene calls an audible, speaking of calling, and comes on to Dom to try and get this badge. She points out, or she asks about her love life and points out the attractive woman in the bar,
none of whom are Dom's type. Fucking right hairpin curve on this conversation that...
Yeah. She comes out without the flannel.
The in-universe Dom immediately picks up on. This, as I put in my notes, increasingly amateur attempts at seduction.
Increasingly drunken women, though. We'll say that.
Yeah.
They are getting inebriated. They've had multiple drinks at this point. I don't know. I think...
Super... And that's the other thing, is it also seems kind of unprofessional by Dom's... I know.
Absolutely.
She's lonely
and
she's isolated and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, they are lampshading it left and right. I don't know. It bothers me. That's all I can say. It's not a fatal mistake. I'm waiting, putting a bookmark in all this till next week to see if like any of this stuff makes sense or if it's worth it. But it feels a little muddled narratively.
Okay. Leon is waiting for Elliot in his apartment, which freaks Angela the fuck out. She thinks everyone, including Elliot, is trying to trick her.
What happened is she walked in, got an instant contact high from the trees Leon was smoking, and
got super paranoid.
One of those ones that gets super paranoid.
Yep. So she leaves, and Leon says, "We have a tight schedule."
I like his reaction to Angela. It's funny because Leon probably knows more than anyone that, like, if she's acting crazy, it's not that crazy given the circumstances, but like the way he goes on, like he just can't believe, like, oh man, you need to get control of your woman, Elliot. What's going on?
Yeah, that's great.
This is crazy. This crazy woman's got to go.
Leon's awesome.
Leon is pretty, pretty awesome.
And
also,
Joey Badass is playing the shit out of it too.
Did you know that Joey Badass song was playing in the bar sequence?
Yeah, so I heard this.
Like, is it called Chicken Curry? Is that the name of the?
I think so.
Yeah. Yep. So there's an interesting thread on Reddit, like, pondering.
Interesting?
Does Joey Badass exist in the universe of Mr. Robot? If so, then who's Leon? Or is Leon?
Maybe he's both.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think Cisco was actually a real DJ.
That's what White Rose's project is. She's trying to split split Joey Badasses in infinite timelines. So he can be a hitman and he can be a hacker. And
oh,
he can
shit.
Be...
Chicken Curry is made by a Joey Badass from a different
time, all parallel
dimension.
Timeline. Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck. I hadn't even considered that.
Mm hmm. Mm hmm. Makes you think.
Blow my
Stops
mind.
To make you think, man.
All right. Philip offers Tyrell the CTO position. This is another flashback from where we were. But he tells him it's only a title. He'll be a figurehead whose only purpose is to obey, not to think. And Tyrell incorrectly believes that Philip needs him. He's totally wrong on that.
Is he? Or is this more bluster and bravado? Because I actually...
That's a fair question. I want to talk about that.
Okay.
But Mr. Robot then asks him if he knew about the attacks, and Philip tells him he allowed them to happen. And he is a leader as opposed to Mr. Robot, who is a lone wolf, and delivers that point as well as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm.
If you're such a leader, where are your followers? Mm-hmm. And that just stuns Elliot, Mr. Robot, into silence because he's right.
Yeah, I like how Mr. Robot was like when Philip was going to town on Tyrell, because Tyrell stood up and is like, I think you're just scared and you're out of moves, which I think is true. Based on my thinking that White Rose has got the better of Philip.
Yeah, I want to talk about
and,
that.
And Philip's comeback is kind of bravado. Mm-hmm. But when he says, it's like, it's not that I'm out of moves, Mr. Wellick. It's just that you're not worth one. And Mr. Robot is in the background like, damn, you got torch, son. Let me Google the nearest burn ward unit. Like, he's kind of reacting as if he is the audience for that one.
But then he gets his own sick
burn. He gets
burn.
His taste of, like, you know, the world does not happen. The thing, events doesn't happen because of lone wolves like you. It's because men like me allow it to happen.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, obviously Philip Price was in a little bit on the 5-9 stuff.
Right.
But I think, and this just goes, and this is the interpretation I'm taking throughout this whole scene, I think he is protesting a bit too much. I mean, obviously White Rose handed him his ass. He wasn't down for all of this. He wasn't aware of all the different phases and whatnot. So I think he's trying to keep make a good face on it. But
yeah, he mentions in this scene, you're a figurehead I inherited from a deal gone wrong, which to me says that he is doing the bidding of White Rose here. But
right.
why? Why
right.
wouldn't this man, this obscenely proud person who refuses to admit defeat in any other arena, why wouldn't he not fight back?
And you start asking questions like, who has got the better, like... White Rose talked about, like, you know, maybe this is fatal for Philip, that he's going to have to groom his replacement. Like, Philip's obviously not on board with that. But if you're from a public, Philip's got to be, like, a near disgrace CEO. All this shit has happened to him. And Tyrell, by contrast, is this kind of heroic figure.
Like, which I have, like, Todd Dabb questions about that.
I agree, but I feel like the narrative is that Philip doesn't have near the juice he thinks he's got, and Tyrell's got more juice than he knows. So I think we're supposed to understand that this is bluster and bravado from, and certainly Mr. Robot takes it as that, because his next pep talk to Tyrell is like, yeah, just go in there, lay low, and when the time's right, we can strike.
Right, which I think is actually what White Rose wants.
I know,
I mean,
I know.
That's the thing. He's maybe got the right idea here.
Yeah.
He's maybe playing into the trap seemingly so that later on, when White Rose needs something of Tyrell, they can exploit that to backfire in her face.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, I wouldn't have thought this a week ago, but now I feel like this finale's got a lot of stakes, because how often can they pull off White Rose getting the better of everyone season after season after season? Like, it's essentially the same thing. You're working all season to do something, and, oh, no, you just played right into White Rose's hands.
Yeah.
Like, how often can that happened before the tide has to turn? And it feels like already the events we see in motion are going to serve to her purposes. And that eventually will get boring, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the place where this, I guess, story that we've got going gets interesting again is when Elliot actually starts to have a fighting chance, or when we can see the bricks being laid for that foundation. And I think that is in this episode where Mr. Robot wakes up.
Mm-hmm.
Now Mr. Robot and Elliot are both serving the same purpose, and they can unite, which they do in this episode, right? I mean, Mr. Robot alerts him, hey, they own the FBI. They're going to start working together, and that, to me, is the interesting turn in the story.
That's true. That's true.
Where they begin to have more power than they had before, and maybe the potential with their, if they can build a following,
yeah,
to combat White Rose somehow.
Yeah, but man, how are they going to survive?
I don't know.
It's almost like,
because they're not willing to do the things White Rose is willing to do.
Yeah, and like White Rose, and she operates above the law. This isn't like some competitor that sees this upstart and like, oh my God, they're going to eat our lunch. What are we going to do? Well, the solution is easy. You kill them all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have the means, motive, and opportunity to do so. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a feat for Sam Raimi to convince me, Sam Esmail, to convince me that the Elliot and Tyrell and Mr. Robot and whomever can stand against the full might of the Dark Army, because they've just made the Dark Army be that formidable. And mm-hmm. I hope they find a way to have them compete on an even footing without degrading the Dark Army. Because like in Star Trek, the Borg was like the big boys. But Voyager, because Voyager sucks, progressively made the Borg weaker and more inept, to where, like, you know, the Borg, one cube could take on the whole Federation, and Voyager, you know, fucking Janeway and her little scout ship can hold off multiple Borg cubes and their mortal enemies. Like, you know, same thing with Worf. Like, Worf's a badass, but he gets his ass handed to him for everyone that steps on that on the Enterprise looking for trouble.
Right.
You're supposed to understand that makes that person a badass, but eventually you start thinking, is Worf just weak? Maybe Worf just doesn't know how to fight.
Yeah.
His human parents ruined him, took the warrior right out of him. If the Dark Army's omnipotent, Mr. Robot's newfound power should scale up to that. The Dark Army shouldn't just start tripping over their own dicks trying to get somewhere.
Yeah, and I think the way that they could start to convince me of that is if Dom takes over Santiago's role. Yeah, but then the question becomes, like, how is Dom invulnerable to the Dark Army?
Yeah.
Because as the head of the FBI, she could certainly wield great force upon them.
Well, she can't be the head of the FBI, because that's a real, like, they've established a Comey as the head of the FBI.
Yeah, 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 but Santiago's
like
position, this branch, whatever.
Counter-cyber-terror unit, whatever it is that he's heading up, yeah.
Yeah, if she can replace him, then certainly she can wield a lot of influence over the Dark Army and, like, really fuck up their plans, but they could just kill her. That's the thing. We've seen this shooting, right? Like, how careful would she have to be to survive a Dark Army attack?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I don't know if I would believe it if they say, well, the Dark Army can't kill her for
some reason. It's almost like the Dark Army is too powerful.
Yeah.
And I really hope they have, like, what I'm hoping is Esmail, I walk away from the episode where, you know, Mr. Robot finally gets over the upper hand, and Elliot gets the upper hand over White Rose, and I'm thinking, like, man, what a clever son of a bitch. Yeah. I hope I'm not thinking, I guess I have to swallow this because I like the show.
Yeah.
And I'm just, the stakes are so high and the power levels disparity is so great, I'm worried because I don't want to have to start calling bullshit on this.
As Philip Price would say, you can't force an agenda, Mr. Esmail. You have to inspire one.
Yep, that's right.
And hopefully he will. So Dom takes Darlene back to her place, where they drink a little more. She shows off her Alexa skills, and then they bang against Dom's better judgment, I might add. Also, Dom puts her gun and badge in her safe, which bums Darlene out, but she doesn't stop the proceedings.
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, Sonos has sponsored a number of our podcasts, and they've been pushing their Alexa-enabled Sonos One box. So it's not like we don't have a little bit of a dog in this fight, but... Mm-hmm. To me, it's weird that they make this Alexa thing such a front and center part. Like, in an episode where Irving duct tapes over Bluetooth speakers, I've got an FBI agent with an always-on microphone in an apartment, and I'm supposed to just ignore that. I'm not supposed to ignore the hacking possibilities of that. I feel like that...
Yeah.
Like, were it not that what I'm sure is a pretty hefty Amazon sponsorship of this, like what do they call that when it's when the product is just product placement, like that would be like they're never gonna hack Dom's Alexa because Amazon would throw a fit about people worrying about that, right?
Sure, that
it's
is a going concern
it's a
with
huge,
Amazon.
It's a huge blind spot that the show has. And like whenever they put this placement in it, it sticks out like a sore thumb because in this very episode, I saw Elliot being aware of how products like that can be exploited by nefarious agents and rogue nation states and whatnot. And then, you know, this Dom, sure, highly placed FBI agent, just Alexa this, Alexa that.
She has nothing to hide, nothing to fear.
Well, she's got a relationship with the criminal informant.
All within the rules.
I know.
All within the
I
rules.
I thought they did a
her.
Good job of showing how. But that's the thing. Like, there's a lot of theories that say that all this shit is theater. Sure. And I don't know how much of it. Like, the theory I think is the most persuasive is there's a cut from,
yes,
Dom saying, "You're not talking your ass out of this," to, yeah, being in front of Santiago and he's losing his shit about how unprofessional. And there's a theory that says that Angela and, or Jesus, Dom and Darlene had a conversation about, we need to expose Santiago. The problem I have with that is I don't think Elliot would be able to communicate with Darlene about the FBI being owned. Yeah, he would have. Yeah, he would have. Because that's how the then beginning.
I thought he began the conversation in the,
okay,
HQ about,
so,
it.
I like that theory a lot. The fact that, like, Dom and Darlene are setting Santiago up to somehow expose him.
Yeah, I hope that's what's happening here because it makes the most sense.
Right.
As opposed to Darlene just spilling the beans on this plan to get into the FBI files.
The most awesome version of the theory is they did this whole thing and they were doing this fucking shit show in front of Alexa just so Santiago could be listening in, and you know, the whole thing was a performance because it does feel a little performy.
I never felt that.
It might just be me. It didn't sit with me initially, and I kept on thinking on second watch this will make sense, and it never did.
It felt to me like someone who was doing something they felt they really shouldn't do and they were uncomfortable with.
And they did sell Dom as being crushingly lonely.
Yes. Yeah, when she's talking to her Alexa in the first few episodes that we see her,
season two, yeah,
it's depressing.
And we know her love life is shit, and that, right, like, the last one she had was, like, a you know, something that she had to choose her career over, so.
And I just think she's bad at this. Like, yeah, the weird awkwardness that you're feeling,
right,
is probably just her being uncomfortable with the situation.
This might be me just panicking. Like that, like, you know, that they just haven't connected all the dots, and I'm starting to get panicky, but it's how I feel in this episode.
Maybe. Yeah, that's fine.
She has an e-kit. That's the other thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Dom buys a bucket, a 5-gallon bucket full
What's
of shit
that
she ordered off the faux Alex Jones guy.
Yeah.
Like, that's the other thing where, like, it starts driving me crazy because they're taking, like, that shit that, like, Alex Jones sells for disaster preparedness and, like, some high-profile, you know, televangelists are preaching. Like, there's this a certain community that's all about disaster prep.
Mm-hmm.
Is a young urban FBI agent one of those audience?
I think it's easier to believe when the disaster has happened.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I'm the kind of person who would not prep for that, but when I see the thing happen, I go, oh, shit, I need to get something here.
That's like, is Dom the type of person that would buy, like, I feel like Dom would either go full-on panic room with 30 of these things.
Feel like Angela.
like I got enough. I can not leave this apartment for 2 years.
Right.
Or she would just be like, fuck it. Like, I'm the shield that guards the realm of men.
If it
gets past me, then, you know, fuck it. I just don't feel like a single e-bucket would be, I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right. The single
Maybe she's
kid.
Up. She's up drinking wine and watching late night TV, and she's
they
like, Alexa,
her.
Order me a e-kit, you know.
She accidentally said it. Or the Alex Jones guy on his show said, Alexa, order an e-kit. And 10 million Alexas order e-kits.
Right. Confirm order. ship now.
My voice is my passport. Ship that shit.
But it's like this kind of uncanny valley. Like, I believe the Dom would do the full blown Girl Scout panic room stocked pantry, you know, like missile silo in the woods kind of thing. Or she would just be like, "Fuck it, devil may care." I don't think she would just like split the difference.
No, this is the most half assed version of what she could do.
Yeah.
A single bucket.
It's a bucket you can shit in and has some meals ready to eat.
And maybe
probably
a bottle of water. Aquafina.
Yep. It's probably got one of those straws you can sip a mud puddle through.
Right.
It's got a crank
some
flashlight.
Iodine just as a backup.
Crank flashlight with a built-in radio so you can hear the impending disaster.
Yep. A really shitty multi-tool.
Oh, yeah. The finest that you can buy in a $39.99 5-gallon bucket.
Get them off AliExpress for 48 cents a pop. All right. Let's go to Angela. She goes back to her completely insane apartment. I was questioning last week whether or not this was a stylistic choice with the red hallway and the black inside of the apartment. Apparently, it's...
She's painted her inside
it
black.
It is. I think it was, but we never saw her actually paint it. She does paint it. You can see that it's painted here. She packs up her stuff. She destroys her phone and takes...
QWERTY,
thank you. And heads out to warn White Rose about the problems.
Do you think that she's talking to QWERTY?
Yeah.
Or an aspect of her dead mother? And QWERTY is their redirect.
I think QWERTY. But yeah, you could be right about that. I could be fooled by a smell.
Do you think that the pictures that have the post-it notes over them are the 4,000 or take a plus or minus dead people?
I think so, yeah.
That she's wanting to bring back?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I thought so too.
That was my guess.
Because at first I thought, like, are these a bunch of pictures of, like, Elliot and her dad and mom and Elliot's dad and mom? But I think, oh, she's the type of person that would probably be obsessively searching the internet for every picture, and she's going to take off, as they come back to life, she's going to take all the post-it notes off.
I feel like she's gone to, you know, the walls where they hang up the pictures of people.
Oh, yeah. She's made her.
And she's just jacked those.
Oh, wow. That's kind of an asshole move, Angela.
Yeah, totally. But she's lost her mind.
Hang in there. Yeah, and she's just gone. Like I said, it's full on Howard Hughes.
It is.
And Nora's a call from her dad. Bet you like that.
Why?
You just hated how, like, that was like your, like, the biggest bugaboo you had last season, how Angela treated her. You were, like, legit angry.
No, she was a shit to her dad.
Yeah, yeah. That, like, really got you worked up. So I thought
the one person who's good in her life and she shits
all over
him.
She gets a call
from
her dad and she's like, oh, fuck him, swipe left. You know, like, that would really set you off.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Shame on you, Angela.
Tried to tee you up and you didn't spike it.
All right, we go back to Leon dropping Elliot off with the Dark Army.
Dr. Wang.
Dr. Wang. Dr. Wang tells him, takes him to White Rose's compatriot. I don't know his name.
I think people are calling him Grant because that's the first name of the actor who plays it, but I don't think we have a name for this guy.
Okay.
It's White Rose's assistant. Like, even the Mr. Robot Wiki, I believe, I looked it up, and he's still referred to as White Rose's assistant.
Yeah, that relationship has totally been turned on its head for me this episode.
No shit.
I thought he was an underling to be shit on constantly, but it turns out they are more equals.
They're a switch dynamic. although, yeah, that's the other thing that I don't know how well it sits with me. But this location is fantastic.
Like the visual
of this midnight rendezvous of this little square on like some kind of rooftop or I don't know what it was. And there's just the one table sitting there. It was really cool. It was really cool. It reminds me a lot of the powwow that Zhang had with Price, the umbrella scenes, you know?
Yep.
Like they have garden. Really good evil guy James Bond meeting locations.
Yeah. Very, very green. But very dark in this scene.
Super green.
So he tells this guy, Grant, I guess, that stage three is the elimination of E-Coin. They are rightly suspicious of an heretofore unmentioned stage three. Elliot's eyeing the backup that they're making of the laptop the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a backup. It's not a backup. So
yeah, what the fuck, guys? That's what I thought it was. Something that can somehow rapidly just take 250 gigabytes and smash it onto a thumb drive.
I thought so too. It turns out it's the opposite. They are rootkitting his computer to track his movements and his activities.
Huh. Okay.
So we'll get to that when we get to the final scene. But yeah, it's kind of the exact opposite of what I assumed was happening at the beginning. And it makes the Dark Army look less stupid. Honestly.
Okay.
So Angela's walking the streets where she runs into the copycat of Cisco before a van pulls up to take her away. I found it kind of funny that they're still running this scam on the streets, the CD scam.
Oh, right.
I assume that this is a CD scam and that you install this on your computer get all your E-coin.
And she's like, no, I will not take your CD this time
right?
She's learned.
Yeah.
She's learned. She's hardened herself from such social attacks.
So she says, she looks at it and rightfully thinks, oh, this is all happening again. Things are returning to normal.
I mean, that's her plan. Like, when she's talking to QWERTY, she's like, we'll just hit the subway and she'll get us just like she did before.
Yeah, this white van. I don't think these are White Rose's people.
I don't think so either.
But why would...
Why do they know her name? Why are they saying to come with us? Is this...
Are they FBI? FBI rolls up in black vans, not white vans.
Yeah, flower vans.
Maybe they're trying to change their image. Although the Empire had black and white. They had that both colors on lockdown.
Yeah,
they
fucked things up with their monochromatic
You need to go
stuff.
With like a lavender. You need to go with like a baby blue, maybe.
I'd say crimson red, except for the Imperial Guard.
Yeah,
you know? Like that's, you know.
They've got all the good colors taken.
They really do. They really do. But I don't know exactly who these people are. My one theory I had is that... You know how Tyrell had the government-issued face man who was like a private security guy?
Yeah.
I wonder if they're with that outfit and that
Phillip?
And that Tyrell is actually... This is something that Mr. Robot and Tyrell are doing to keep Angela safe. Or, you're right. You're right. It could be like, you know, I'm sure... Was that provided by E-Corp?
I guess
the private security
government issue face man is still out there. He survived.
Yeah, he survived. He survived.
So
we haven't seen him.
Maybe Tyrell would still have him on the payroll.
He would have a phone number to call to get more.
I can't remember when he came into the
government
scene.
Issues lots of faces. It's just not one.
That's
it
true.
Wouldn't be government issued face man if there's just one.
Right.
The government issue implies they're handing him out like T-bucks, you know?
Okay, but I'm wondering if it isn't Phillip, though, because we conspicuously start this episode with Phillip eyeing Angela and something about her enchanting him. So maybe he's going back for a power play on White Rose. Maybe this is his key to,
he's
like,
gonna,
White
he's
Rose.
He's going to shoot both of her eyeballs at, just be like, see, White Rose?
Right. Should have done this in the first place.
Uh-huh.
No, I could see him trying to make a move on White Rose through Angela, though, because that's the way that White Rose... made the move on him.
Yeah, but
and
like,
I don't know how.
I was going to say, what evidence does he have that she's special to White Rose? Like, to me, that's like White Rose was fucking with Phillip. Like, if I find your teddy bear that you still sleep with, and I'm like, aha, Jim, I'm going to piss on your teddy bear, and you sent me a video of, like, you pissing on your own teddy bear. Like, okay, I'm a real dumbass for threatening to piss on your teddy bear.
Right.
I don't know.
Not sure.
That's to say, like, a lot of balls up in the air, and I think that a lot's going to depend on this finale as far as tying all... Because, you know, obviously some of the balls can still be in the air across seasons, but ask a lot of questions that has thus far have no answers and felt like they doubled down and asked a bunch of other questions in this episode, and I would definitely want some answers next week.
Yeah, I mean, for you know, all the protests about the fake Stage 3 going into action here, a Stage 3 is definitely going into effect.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the one that Elliot describes to the Dark Army.
Well, that's the other thing is, like, what's funny is Elliot's perpetrating, like, the Dark Army still has the goal of destroying E-Corp.
Yeah.
And he knows that they know that he knows that that's not their goal.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know that he knows.
Right.
So he still seems like he's the fanatic, like, oh, I now see E-Corp's lifeline and we got to cut it off. And.
Mm-hmm.
This is the phase three, and like, will that actually work? Like, that's the thing. Like, with the I can't wait till we get to the final scene with White Rose.
No, it's so weird because he's, I want to say inadvertently, but I think he knows this full well, is that he is becoming dangerous to White Rose in his actions, and he's telling them that he's dangerous to them.
Right.
Like, the destruction of E-Coin, Elliot knows is not what they want. And yet that's what he's proposing as the Stage 3.
Why does he know why? Why does... I don't think White Rose gives a shit one way or another.
No, I think she has more plans for E-Corp. Otherwise, why not destroy E-Corp?
Okay.
And get onto the Bitcoin train.
Okay.
But she has plans for
E-Coin. Nothing else. That's
E-Coin.
That's how she jerks the chain of America, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
And especially like putting Tyrell in place, she thinks that Tyrell might still be loyal.
Right.
Whereas,
well, he can certainly
we know
be,
he's not.
He can certainly be, you know, exploited.
Sure, or
they know
manipulated.
All the secrets.
Yeah. Absolutely, but Elliot here is saying, "Hey, I'm trying to take down the thing that you still see some value in."
Right.
When that is, in fact, his actual goal.
Right.
So,
well, I don't know that he wants to take down E-Corp now. Like this season, it seems like he's gotten religion about maybe E-Corp is a necessary evil.
Well, no, like, he doesn't want to take down E-Corp. He wants to take down E-Coin.
Okay. But
there's a difference.
But the takedown, right? Like, I thought my understanding of Elliot's understanding of the world is that E-Corps are a necessary evil because in absence of a power, something will fill that vacuum. And the like, what you really need is what your preference is, a E-Corp that's not evil.
Okay.
You want an E-Corp, not an evil corp. So I don't think he wants to destroy evil corp because I think he's worried that an even worse thing will take its place.
Yeah, I mean, but maybe he is evolved beyond the undo phase, but I mean, he's still trying to hit that undo button for the 5-9 hack.
Yes,
which in my mind would destroy E-Coin as the common currency, but because the U.S. dollar would be back in effect.
Right, but it would probably help out E-Corp. So, and he
right,
thinks
and that's my distinction between killing E-Corp and killing E-Coin.
Okay.
That's why I'm making that distinction.
Okay, fair enough.
But I don't know. It's hard to tell sometimes where people's heads are at. So Tyrell realizes he's a prisoner of his own making. Wait, no. Darlene wakes up in the middle of the night, tries to sneak Dom's badge out of her safe, but she's caught. This is where you were talking about that cut between this and her being in the FBI headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Then we go over to Tyrell, realizing he's a prisoner of his own making, and Mr. Robot says they can use that to buy their time, find a vulnerability which will take down White Rose, Price, and their friends. Tyrell says the DA has a man inside the FBI.
The DEA?
The DA.
Oh.
Dark
Army. I was like, wait a second. I got my Breaking Bad. I'm a Mr. Robot for a minute.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. The NSA probably does, too.
Yeah, it's Merker. It's that fucking Merker, man. I knew it.
Hiding
knew
in plain
it.
Sight behind that mustache.
Yep.
They're gonna make Tyrell a plant, I guess. Both inside of E-Corp and inside of the Dark Army.
Did you notice that
Army?
Mr. Robot still doesn't have an accurate, because he thinks White Rose and Price are like partners in world domination. There's still a fundamental misunderstanding in the power dynamic in that they are rivals with and they're not even rivals in the sense of equals. It's more of like a feud, like, you know, one sports team's always beating the shit out of the other sports team. So there's a one-sided rivalry there. Like, White Rose, I don't think, sees Philip as an equal or a competitor.
Yeah, Whereas, now that you say that, I think you're right. I was giving the benefit of the doubt to Mr. Robot and saying he's lumping them all together as a class of people.
But I think
to take down football by saying, I'm taking out the Patriots and the Colts.
Right. Yeah.
And
but
all their friends.
He's still like an ant from a perspective outside of a building and seeing all these people go in his building and like all these people must be powerful. He doesn't understand that, no, there's one person that's powerful.
You're right about that.
And I don't know if that'll be important through the plot. Like, this is yet another misunderstanding that'll make him fall with you know, it's like every time he falls for White Rose's bullshit, is he going to come away a little bit smarter and tougher? And that's the story they're telling, or I don't know. But
his fuse is really, really short at this point. And it's a terrible analogy because it implies that he's going to fight back and explode and kill people. But my point is he has very little rope to work with here because now the Dark Army is actively going to try to kill him. If you believe this final scene.
Yeah.
Before we get there, Dom and her boss question Darlene. Dom reveals that her and Darlene had quote-unquote relations, and Darlene reveals that she has the keys to undoing 5-9. Dom thinks this is a no-lose scenario and is completely flabbergasted. Can't believe her boss won't take her up on her offer when her boss tells... And then her boss tells her, go write a report, and yeah, I'm putting another agent on Darlene, which
seals the deal. And I continue to be impressed of how the Santiago guy is playing this, because...
Well, he's fallen flat on his face.
That's what I'm
saying,
but you see that. Like, he is just racing for anything he can use for a pretext to save his ass or the Dark Army's ass. And
now it's inappropriate behavior.
Right.
Don't write your report. Don't question me.
Right. You're going to fuck... Yeah, we got this lead, but you're going to fuck it up because it's all going to come back because blah, 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 and...
But she points out, you know, I didn't break any rules.
Yeah.
Like, technically, I did nothing wrong here.
Yeah, I could be frowned on.
Yeah.
I could have my ass chewed. But
completely eliminating all of his feet to stand on.
This could fix the country, what ails the country.
Right.
Yeah. No.
Why aren't you going along with this?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I'm kind of impressed that they've made it last this long, but it does feel inevitable that that Dom is going to have to join at some way, at some level of F Society.
Yeah.
Because until Santiago gets swept to the side, she's never going to make any headway. She now knows beyond a shadow of the doubt there's something hinky going on here, and you either going to have to accept it or you got to go extra legal with it.
Shit, you know what? I think I just identified why this show doesn't feel quite as, like, societally cohesive as, like, a Wire. And I feel like there's no balance of power with journalists.
Mm.
There has been, as of this point, there has been almost zero journalism happening.
Right. And the journalism we see is, like, essentially a mouthpiece for the dark armies.
Right. Because the only balance of power here is the people.
Right.
Because so what? Okay, Santiago gets caught in his lies. Who's going to come down on him?
Yeah.
How does the evidence get out? We need a perspective from the journalists who can get this out to the public.
Right.
Report that Santiago is working for the Dark Army, the Chinese government, whatever he's doing here.
Right.
Because otherwise, I mean, you've got presidents on payroll. You've got the heads of law enforcement. Like, what is going to be his comeuppance?
I'm sure, but wouldn't it be easier to buy off journalists than... I mean, if you,
I mean, maybe depending on the, you know, how much integrity they have, like every journalist,
right? And that
because
just goes
it only
by,
takes some journalists.
Yeah, I think because I think you're picking out the edges of the real problem of the show is that, like, you have to swallow a certain amount of giant conspiracy,
sure,
like world government, shadow government kind of stuff to make this,
right.
And that's fine. Like in a science fiction or fantasy type of, like, I don't have a problem with that. Like, I don't think that has any bearing to how the real world actually works.
But they're setting up a scenario in which Santiago can't be caught, because if you believe in that shadow government, which the show most certainly wants you to believe in wholeheartedly, then you have to say there's no one that's going to bring Santiago to justice.
Right.
Because
or
everyone
if he's
is
brought
bought
to justice,
paid for.
It will serve another
sure,
objective
that
of the
too.
Dark Army.
Yeah.
Right.
But the real justice would be the people's justice,
mm-hmm.
Getting this guy out, getting Dom in his position. But I just don't know what the mechanism is for that.
Yeah.
I guess we'll see.
It's hacking.
Maybe
hacking.
It's Darlene.
You got to go take it right to the people. Just like take jack the channels,
uh-huh.
Put on your careful masker of the bourgeoisie mask, and just give them a truth bomb.
Okay.
Santiago, a middle management of the FBI, is working for the Dark Army. Just put that on an 8 p.m. time slot on Friday, and it's war over. War over.
Yeah. We own your presidents. We own your FBI people, because we don't know his actual title.
Right, right. He's not the director or the assistant director. He's
but
the
he's
head
somewhere
of,
high
yeah,
up.
Some, yeah.
In that FBI
he's
thing
nebulously
you got.
Nebulously high up and connected.
My favorite line in this scene is chew balls. When Darlene tells Santiago to chew balls.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like thinking about that phrase.
But I think this is a ruse. I think they're setting Santiago up.
And I
agree. Chew balls is a front.
Chew balls is the code word to execute Plan Omega.
Yeah. Yep.
I do like the fact that, like, somehow these two women have cooked up a trap for Santiago. I think that that's definitely what's going on.
Hopefully we see the reveal in next episode. Don't have to wait too long. So at the end of the scene, Santiago calls Irving in a panic, and Irving says, okay. Which, Santiago's not too happy about that response, but we'll move on.
Did you notice that, like, in the background, there's a TV where the United States is planning a cyber attack against Iran in retaliation?
And they're announcing it on television?
Right. Like, you know, a little bit of a tot dab violation there. But I just think it's interesting how the show moves the conventional, like, on Main Street narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, now it's just like the United States, of course, is going to strike back against Iran.
Yeah.
And, like, how is that serving the Dark Army's purposes?
Yeah.
Like, they're just fighting this false cyber war on...
I mean, it's a distraction.
Yeah.
It's certainly a distraction from the true enemy.
Yep. Yep. Wars are good for that.
We go to White Rose, who is furious that her project hasn't even begun to be packed for transfer to Congo. Grant, as we're calling him, tells White Rose that this is her own fault for not listening to him and going ahead with the attacks, which has caused a whole bunch of disruption at the border security and stuff. And she hears him out, and he says that he'll go to their partners with a more persuasive argument. Also, and then the scene starts intercutting between Mr. Robot writing the message on the mirror, and Elliot explaining his real stage three involving the malware. And this guy, Grant, realizing that they're the target now of Elliot, and he says that Elliot has to die.
Yeah, I thought it was just interesting. First of all, B.D. Wong is doing like incredible voice work. Because I realized as I was watching him scream in his feminine persona that like I struggled to do anything more than like a caricature of a woman's voice.
Yeah, it's a mockery of a woman's voice.
And if I had to scream, it would be even more so. And like the way that this guy, like, because, you know, B.D. Wong's got a pretty deep and melodious voice himself. Like the way he's able to keep that feminine aspect even when he's shouting at the top of his lungs, like that's a hell of a fucking performance.
Yeah, this scene, B.D. Wong's performance in this scene is incredible. Yeah, I thought.
Yeah, and also like the interesting, like the power exchange that it seems like the Grant and White Rose enjoy having, where, and it's like so many subtle things, like when she lets him win the argument at the end, she punctuates it by speaking Chinese, which she had previously scolded to never do, and his like, not only is she letting him win on the surface, but also there's the subtext of like, oh, I'm going to speak Chinese to you because that's something we've been fighting about all season long.
Okay. That's cool.
And also, like, I also don't know that she's really letting him win or she's giving him enough rope to fail or maybe to hang himself with. Because she's just very, like, do what you think you should do. Like, and also, like, to the extent that she's using Elliot as, like, a chaos engine, maybe she's using Grant the same way. Like, there's so many fucking wheels within wheels of these two. Your head spins.
Yeah.
And also, and the kiss whole time, at the end, the glass player is playing
her fucking look when he says, by the way, this is your fault. Her look is priceless.
And but she's playing these minor chords. Like, this is, like, really dramatic glass harmonica type stuff he's doing. But yo, I like the because everything he's saying sounded right to me. Like, yeah, but then when White Rose came back with like, you, what you don't understand about Philip Price is that if I showed him mercy, then he would just be emboldened to fuck with me more.
Yeah, he'd sense vulnerability, weakness.
I don't know if that's true, because it seems like he's emboldened to fuck with her no matter what.
Maybe, I don't really
know. He's certainly
know.
In a weaker position to fuck with her now.
Yeah, that's true.
He's got up to his ass in
explosions.
He's up to his ass in whatever. Essentially fallout from that. So it's like, it's funny, because when she says, I think you're wrong, or when he says, I think you're wrong, and here's the reasons, and then White Rose kind of acquiesces to it. But then he also, they meet in the middle, because he's like, having said all that, I will now go back to our mayors and governors and presidents and congressmen, and I will apply more pressure.
Right. But also, we're getting rid of Elliot. Like, there's a compromise here, right?
Right.
Like, you have kept Elliot around as your pet long enough. This, whatever you see in Elliot has not helped us. Let's get rid of him, and let's do things mostly your way, but also my way. It felt like less of White Rose being the final say-so here and more of them being a team.
Yeah, which is, that's, I don't quite understand the power exchange that's going on here, but I know that that's, you know, that's a lot of powerful people like playing around with that. Like, I mean, it's something that's certainly almost tropey. Like, I'm thinking of, like, you know, turns out Don Draper likes being slapped by prostitutes, or, you know, what was have you seen The Punisher?
No.
Okay, well, there's a plot line in the new Punisher about
slapped by prostitutes.
Essentially, yeah, like this BDSC, he's got a femdom that not the Punisher, but like his high ranking general gets his ass spanked and whipped by. So it's like, I wonder. I mean, I don't know, because like this character is designed to play with masculinity and femininity and society's projections of that, and not just our society and culture, but other societies and cultures like China. And it's all really super fascinating and well done, but I'm not sure what it all adds up to yet.
No, and I could see a worse performance, like anything less than a stellar performance making this a train wreck.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like this, anything less than excellence, this would be such a fucking mess.
Right. Yeah, no, but B.D. Wong nails it. So this final scene, we see Elliot's hacking of the Dark Army, and I assume that wrongfully that this was just him having given them his laptop so that he could put some malware on their system. Mm-hmm. That's not actually what happened here. So what happened is the Dark Army put, according to the security consultant on the show, put malware on a rootkit specifically on Elliot's system. Uh-huh. And he kind of knew that they were going to do that. They were going to track him and monitor him. So he went and he found the rootkit and he used that to upload some kind of PDF zero day exploit onto the Dark Army system because any files, new files that he creates on his system, mm-hmm. the Dark Army is automatically pulling off and it's being sent to them. Mm-hmm. So he created a document that would essentially introduce malware into their systems through their own malware that he would then exploit to get access to their backend.
But doesn't that seem like something that
it seems a little foolish that you would monitor him from a computer connected to your overall network?
Yeah.
Certainly.
Especially since, like, when I thought...
But it's less foolish than, oh, we got a virus from sticking our USB thing in this guy's computer.
It's still, like, because... Again, when they first powered that on, I thought they were in some kind of protected workstation that was designed just for things like this.
And visually, it looks like that.
Yeah.
When they show an entirely blank factory floor.
Right, with just one table set up. And as Elliot said, or like, I think there's like a subtitle to the effect of like, this is some kind of like, what was it? Is like some kind of checkpoint or. I forget the exact term of art they used to say that this is like some kind of firewalled, secured sandbox where they open nefarious shit like this just so it doesn't do this thing.
Right.
It's weird.
Like a DMZ sort of thing.
Yeah, and it wasn't entirely... And the fact that it seemed like it was just like as soon as they turned it on, oh, I got the whole network.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm with you. It doesn't quite feel like the Dark Army should have fallen for this.
Right.
But...
Again, they're just too fucking powerful.
And yeah.
But then again, like that's the other thing is like... Elliot's superpower is his hacking, so maybe he does have this sick zero-day exploit that he's got up his sleeve that not even the Dark Army would know with all of their literal Dark Army of Chinese hackers.
I mean, it's possible. I mean, zero-day exploits, for people who don't know, are things that have just been introduced that there are no solutions for.
They're the unknown knowns.
right. They're the hacks that have just come out.
Like
and
someone in the lab
has
figured it out, and the person who makes the software doesn't know about it.
Right.
No people that run businesses know about it. It's literally known by one person, perhaps.
Right. Hasn't hit the news yet. So it's possible that he figures out or finds this zero-day exploit and that the Dark Army does not know about. They look at the file, they clear the file, and they send it on to their network, to their more permanent larger network.
Right.
Possible, I suppose. But that's
but also
assuming
like, that's
the
thing
large
like,
Dark Army, the army of people that they have at their disposal has not been perusing the same forums.
And also
to
means,
find the zero day.
It also means that like they are not monitoring the network sufficient to see unusual patterns of traffic. Like there's all kinds of ways tell that you've been hacked.
Sure.
After the
unknown
fact.
Unknown IP addresses connecting to your systems. Like,
right. And the fact that he's like, I've got all of Dark... Like, I don't like that they dealt with absolutes. Like, not a small part. Like it's one thing to hack the environmental controls of Iron Mountain. Because who the fuck would think about something being vulnerable because of your fucking thermostat, right?
Or the UPS is building up extra hydrogen or whatever.
Like because the battery chemistry is off. This is like... When he smugly sits back from this world map that's going slowly green and says, I now own all of Dark Army. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. This is like Superman punching Steppenwolf. Like, okay. I mean, I wish it was a little bit more grounded or tougher. But what might happen is that this is a super rope-a-dope trap that Elliot has now walked into. And it's all part of White Rose's design. And then I come back to my original fear of if they just keep having the Dark Army be one step perpetually above because she's got some kind of world simulator computer or whatever, like how long can that be interesting?
Yeah. Here's the other thing that we're not considering is that there are, let's say, hundreds of thousands of people who are watching this show who are not quite as adept with technology as we are, and that this would not trip anybody's radar except the people who have dealt with this on their day-to-day lives as their job.
It's still the first time I can say that Mr. Robot's done something like that. It's the first time they've cut a corner. And every show does. Like Breaking Bad famously cut a corner.
Sure.
And then they had to allow Walt to poison Brock. Mm-hmm. They inexplicably had Walter White do a whole bunch of shit unbeknownst to us, the viewer. And they never did that before. Yeah. They had to cut the corner to tell that story. So, like, it happens. I'll cut them slack. I'm just saying, like, it feels like I'm seeing a corner being cut that they've never really cut before.
That's fair. I think I'm willing to let them have that, because I could not imagine a scenario in which I have to come up with hack after hack after hack that is so innovative that not even the most techie of people watching the show will see it coming.
I just wish it was more limited in scope. It wasn't literally him seeing this fucking, like, risk global map that just, like,
the visualization
flipped.
Of it.
Right. I mean... The only thing we're missing is Dennis Nedry coming up and saying, you know, like...
They did that shit in the first season where they had, like, this countdown or something on one of the servers.
Mm.
Or the visualization of the servers being taken over.
Yeah.
Or coming back online or something.
But that was a real tool that hackers used to track, like, you know, people nibbling at their
honeypot. I remember there being
something
about
it.
And
that was the point,
right?
It was the honey. I know, like I could say, when you listen to two IT nerds that maybe this is the first time where we don't really understand it because we're out of our depth.
Maybe.
But again.
That's possible. I read that article, but I only read
the majority
of it. They just
needed to limit the scope because, like, I just don't believe anything can take over all of anything, you know? Like, okay. What does that even mean? Yeah. I own the Dark Army. Like, what if you said that about the United States? What do you own? Do you own our power infrastructure? Do you own our nuclear facilities? Yeah. Do you own the DOD?
The, like, people in charge of these systems?
Do you own Walmart's internal network? Like, what the fuck are you owning? Like, when you own Dark Army, what part of Dark... And that's, like, it's just, I just own Dark Army.
Their phones. Yeah. Their phones. They can't make any phone calls. They can't send text.
He stole all their weapon skins for CSGO on Steam.
Yep.
And sold them
and
all.
And he's selling them all off.
For 3 cents. And they're just going to be so pissed.
Fraction of the price. They had that.
So pissed when they find
that
out.
Sweet fucking hat. Now it's gone.
Right. Yeah. And you can't get that back.
No. They had their own custom Dark Army mask that they made. No, those are sold.
Oh, yeah.
Forget
those
about
are
it.
Slick.
Yeah.
You see a squad of those show up, and that's your ass, man. Yeah, I don't know. It's like I all said, right. It's like it's one of those things where I sometimes feel like it's a probably unwarranted criticism because, like, you know, it's literally the first time this season that I've had that feeling. But on the other hand, you know, season two is a bit of a mess, and that's why I'm always like, I think that's part of the watching experience. Like, am I the only person that watches these shows and kind of, like, I feel like I get so invested, I'm like watching my kid do a piano recital, like every false note, I'm like, or they, you know, like,
I don't think you're the only one.
Okay.
I've been on Reddit.
Okay. Yeah. But then again, the other reaction is like, well, stop being such a nervous Nelly. You're ruining, you know,
right.
Like, and
right.
Both of those viewpoints are kind of accurate. So all I can do is tell you what I'm thinking.
And if you take a step back and look at the bigger picture here, the things that are in motion are Elliot owns the Dark Army. The Dark Army owns the FBI, and the Dark Army wants Elliot dead. So now those are the two forces that are going to start to clash, right? Like, Elliot's knowledge of what the Dark Army is doing versus their desire to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where next episode becomes super interesting to me, is how does Elliot avoid death in the face of what we view as, like, an omnipresent, omnipotent Dark Army?
But if he owns every bit of their communications and...
Right.
Strategic network.
He can
then
see them coming a mile away. He should be able to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like playing Madden with somebody and seeing the plays they're calling. Like,
yeah.
It suddenly becomes very easy to defeat them. But, like, that would feel like cheating, literally.
Yeah.
Like, if you just have this Deus Ex Machina hack that allows it's with one exploit he flips the tables on. I feel like it's earned.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's going to happen. I think it's going to blow up in his face, and just we'll have to see.
We will. But that's the end of the episode.
As we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, this episode of 2-Bit Encryption is sponsored by Sonos.
Sure is.
Who would love nothing more than to fill your house with awesome sounds from your music collection and your TV and movie library. Also, heartily endorsed by one FBI agent, Dom... Yeah. Peregrino.
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 It's not her name, but She loves it, and she's an FBI agent, so you can't go wrong.
So the newest models of Sonos One speaker technology have Alexa built right into it.
Yep.
She's just trapped in that little speaker, and you can speak to her and get your daily 5-9, which I'm not—
is a thing. I don't know if people are aware of this, but she says, give me the daily 5-9. You can do this on a Sonos One.
This is
speaker.
Another one of their alternate reality games. You can actually do get the daily 5-9, and it'll send you on a secret mission to China.
Well, kind of. I mean, it's this interactive.
I have bought
choose
tickets
your own
to
adventure.
Beijing.
Yeah, it's like a choose your own adventure sort of game that you play with Alexa, and she describes the scenario to you, and you get to choose what you do and see how far you can get in it, essentially before you're arrested by Dom, the FBI.
Yeah.
So I thought it was kind of cool that they tied that in, because when they said that, I remembered, oh, shit, yeah, I can do this on my Sonos now.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I did it, and I realized, oh, I actually don't have time right at this moment to do it, so I had to say, Alexa, stop.
Mm-hmm.
But
that explains all the Asian men in masks hanging outside our office. You can't stop. You started something you can't stop.
No. I promise you, there will be no Asian men in masks showing up if you use a Sonos One device.
What about sleazy car salesman?
Not unwelcomed. You have to go to Irving's shop.
Okay.
To really—
and to be fair, he'll cut you a fair deal.
Sure.
On a top-notch automotive machine.
Right. So why are we talking about the 5-9?
Because the Alexa integration of Sonos is pretty awesome. If you haven't tried the voice-activated stuff, it's really cool. Like, you know, being able to turn up the volume when you turn on the water to wash dishes, or change tracks with your hands wet, or you're like, you know, recently I was hands deep inside a turkey and a little too schmaltzy of Christmas music came up, and I said, hey, Alexa, skip track. And she did it.
Mm-hmm.
She did it. She'll tell me what the temperature is, what my commute's going to be like, what the daily 5-9 is. I can order stuff off Amazon. It's super cool. And this is all on top of the superior Sonos speaker technology, because these things are the size, like these One speakers are the size of like a coffee can, and they sound amazing, and they're super easy to set up. You don't have to have anything but power and download the Sonos app, and it takes you through the rest of the setup process, which is quick and easy and painless. It's magical.
All Wi-Fi, which has a host of advantages, like not getting disconnected when you leave the room and stuff like that. Yeah, really, really good system. And if you set them up in like a 5.1 home theater configuration, they sound really great.
You can mesh them throughout the house to like, you can play
that
different
too.
Things in different rooms, or you can have the whole house rock into the same beat. It's super flexible and it sounds great. And they have a special deal for our listeners.
They do. Right now they're offering the listeners of 2-Bit Encryption 10% off one order of $2,500 or less for any product on Sonos.com. You can go there to Sonos.com and use the promo code ROBOT10, that's capital ROBOT10, at Sonos.com to receive the offer. You cannot combine it with other discounts or promotions, and it's a limited time only. So act now if you are looking to play the 5-9 game, or if you're looking for a really good home theater system. Or
if you want a kick-ass Christmas present for a tough person, because they're going, like, you know, read... It's not just us saying this. Read the reviews. Like I don't know if you can find a bad one, because they sound awesome. They're easy to set up.
They do.
And they do what they say on the tin.
Sonos.com, robot10.
This podcast also sponsored by us, baldmove.com, specifically our club at club.baldmove.com. It's a great way to support us if you like what we're doing. And honestly, if we weren't doing this full time, we probably wouldn't be doing the Mr. Robot podcast. We'd be doing the biggest show at the time, which is probably The Walking Dead, and we'd be much sadder and poorer for it. So thanks.
Poorer of spirit, not poorer of wallet.
Right. But yeah, like doing it full time allows us to do some of the smaller, maybe the less popular shows, but it's still worthy. Things like Fargo and The Leftovers and now Mr. Robot. So if you appreciate the coverage that we do, please go to the club.baldmove. No obligation. Just go to club.baldmove.com. You can sample the different bonus features that you can get. You can try it free for 30 days. You get a risk-free 30-day trial by going to club.baldmove.com and signing up. There's ad-free feeds. There's extended bonus audio and video content.
Still working on those interactive features that Sonos got.
Yeah.
Sonos has got us beat with the 5.9, daily 5.9 stuff.
What's a daily club?
We're working on the interactive stuff.
The daily club, where me or Jim shows up and hits you with a bacon turkey sandwich. That's something that people would pay for, right?
At least $6.95, the cost of a club sandwich or something. If McAllister's can do it, Bald Move can do
it. Damn straight. And if you can catch it, hey, it's a tasty club. Join the club, club.baldmove.com. Feedback. Yes, let's get to feedback. You can send that in to robot@baldmove.com. First up, Sean McSee with some points from last episode. I was listening to your episode 3.07 pod while walking
it.
My
it was
dog.
Terrible.
And walking the dog, is that a euphemism for something?
No, he's just
walking his dog.
Taking Flipper for a walk.
Felt the need to point out something about your brief to Elaine's conversation. Marty's mom is Lorraine, FYI.
Oh, shit, yeah.
Yeah.
You Elaine, can see where Lorraine, I might mistake those, yes?
There's just too many Ain names. Anyways, removing the shoes that was significant there, with the costume woman walks out complaining about the get-up, the alternate universe married to Biff Lorraine wore to Back to the Future 2. She takes off her shoes, leading Elliot to remember that Muhammad had said about Trenton tripping over herself when she tried to take off her shoes when they entered a mosque.
Okay. Immediately
after that, he flags an ice cream truck driving rabbi and asks about the nearest mosque.
So this is reminding him about the mosque?
Yeah, apparently.
To go there?
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So that made the connection story. That tracks.
Yeah.
That tracks. I mean, I didn't need it because I'm like, he's a Muslim kid. He's lost in the city. One of the things you might try is, I just thought that was just him trying that. But like, there's a direct connection. That's pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
Bob M. Hey, I was Tot Dab wondering if you Tot Dab found some podcast Tot Dab that spoke more Tot Dab intelligently about... Okay, let me stop you there, Bob. I created fucking Tot Dab because of previous reactions to people not appreciating me taking 5 to 10 minutes to talk about the bullshit that I didn't like about what they were doing, the socio-political and economic situation of podcasts. If those efforts are not appreciated, I will be happy to bloviate 15 minutes or so about how unconvincing and thin and pastiche I find it all.
Right.
But I invented Tot Dab so that people could just like, oh, it's Aaron talking about Tot Dab. It'll be gone in 30 seconds and we can move on with our lives.
Right.
And also...
So go Tot Dab yourself.
Also, I explain literally every episode what Tot Dab means. It's that one thing that drives Aaron batshit.
Which I feel like now we need a term for that. So we can just describe, we can say a term that will describe what Tot Dab means so that we don't have to describe what Tot Dab means.
We need a dissatisfaction with Tot Dab, the twat dab.
Twat.
And Bob M can leave the twat dab brigade.
Okay. And then you'll have to now explain what twat dab is every time.
Right, right. See, it's a monster that's been created. Yeah. So. David says, much like you weren't sure whether to assign meaning to stylistic move from the 16:9 aspect ratio to CinemaScope, I have a question about something that's been happening all season. Certain scenes have a ticking clock in the background. Some, but not all, of the scenes with Elliot at the therapist house. Some, but not all, of the scenes where he's working at E-Corp. And some, but not all, of the scenes with Elliot and Angela. We know that time itself has an oversized presence on the show, but is this just a tension ploy they're randomly using in certain scenes, or is there meaning assigned to the scenes that have the ticking clock?
Man, if this were any other show, I would say you are safe to ignore it. In this show, I don't know. This could be super significant.
I mean,
I have no take on it.
The White Rose is obsessed with time. She's obsessed with clocks. She's obsessed with the keeping of time. She precisely measures out her meetings and all that stuff. So I don't think it's immediately obvious what they're going with it now, but I would not be surprised if when this is all said and done, you have a crack.com style 5 things you didn't know about Mr. Robot, and it only ticked at certain scenes that if you pull them out and watch them, that's the actual timeline that is authorized by the White Rose universe. I don't know. I haven't seen any compelling theory about what that is beyond just this shit happened in Dunkirk all the time, and it wasn't because White Rose was manipulating the Nazis' sense of time. It was just like he suggests here, David suggests, it just builds tension.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, that's something that Cecily and I have noticed, that like when we're playing Fortnite, anytime that, you know, the player is about to constrict, it plays like 5 seconds of a ticking clock, and it drives a fucking batty. Because hearing a ticking clock just makes you tense.
Sure, that's what it's there for.
So it could just be artistic purposes, but
it reminds you of your mortality.
Right.
You don't want that.
Right. Reminds you you're going to have to wind this thing here pretty soon. Justin B., now the storyline is just about caught up to the weird date issue from the series premiere, can we revisit the topic? Just to clarify, after sleeping with Shayla in Season 1, Episode 1, Elliot looks at his phone, which shows that it's Friday, October 23rd. The fact that it's Friday clues us into the fact that the year is 2015. It seemed inconsequential at the time, but we now know this scene takes place after the 5-9 hack, after the 9-29 attack, and after last week's episode, which took place on October 21st, 2015. So now that the storyline is about up to this point, is Ismail going to give us some payoff on the what the hell this is all about?
I didn't even know about this.
So this is something I've been reading in the background, but there is a lot of weird time discrepancies. There are dates that are shifted off by one, like they establish it's a Wednesday, but in the actual 2015, it should be a Thursday. There are senses like this where Elliot looks down and sees a date which purports to be from the future. And I don't think at this point you can write them all off as production errors. Especially, you know, on this show. Mm-hmm. There's instances where a lot of people, there was early on in the season, people thought that they were playing with the idea that that's a common programmer mistake to make, that you're using a zero indexed array, and you think you're using but you think that, like, the first of something is a one. Well, when you're talking about arrays and stuff, it's often a zero. So, like, they're playing with the idea that somebody has made a fundamental mistake at that level, like you're using a zero index instead of a one indexed. But there's also, now that we've got this kind of a naked allusions to manipulation of time, the idea that we are actually that's just like Angela kind of did that weird time jitter when she visited her lawyer last season, that we're actually seeing this, that we're going to understand this as evidence of actual time being manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
But there is absolutely no, I don't think, defining proof either way what this is.
No, and every time they have characters mention it overtly, they're characters like Angela.
Right.
Who have clearly lost their mind. We can't take anything Angela says at face value.
Not
about,
anymore.
Oh, I'm not taking,
like,
your CD this time.
Right.
So
the other thing
I don't know, man. I'm waiting for some kind of reveal on that.
The other thing is, if it is a production error and they are all off by one, that's like someone just at some point, the person that keeps the dates are off by one, that could actually mean that this was in 2014, which then doesn't introduce any time issues at all.
Okay.
But again, with this, but that gets you in trouble, because, like, I remember making that argument about, like, True Detective. Like, there was, you know, the spiral drawings on these kids' walls, and there was a lot of stuff that's like a Lovecraftian imagery. And Season 1 of True Detective was a lot about kind of like this Southern fried Gothic Lovecraftian themes. And it turns out in an interview with the set director, he's like, oh, those were literally just drawings my kid made, and I brought them in because they were the same age. And a lot of people have made the same excuse. And, well, this is such a carefully thought and tightly plotted show that it can't be by... It can. It absolutely can be.
Mm-hmm.
But I doesn't feel like it, because it's just too pervasive. It's not a single isolated thing. It's a thing they're doing. So if anyone has any better ideas than that, like, let me know. And also post it on Reddit. Get some karma for yourself. Anna, when we first learned that someone wealthy was covering Angela's mom's medical bills, my mind immediately went to Price, not White Rose, and I didn't know why. But I even changed my mind after listening to your coverage and your take about it perhaps being White Rose. But during this flashback in this week's episode, it looked like Price recognized Angela.
Shit.
Given the striking resemblance between Angela and her mother, I'm back to thinking Price has some sort of relationship with her all those years ago. Thoughts?
That could explain the weird reaction he has to her.
Let me give you another take. Joe M. related, is Philip Price's Angela's dad? As I was watching this episode, it began with Philip seeing Angela for the first time, yada yada. What I would describe as a John Hughes romantic score in the background, with him looking at her with puppy dog eyes and demanding the Allsafe take over the count.
Mm-hmm.
The ages work out, or at least he may have been in his 40s and Angela's mom in her 30s when the affair happened. She got a call from dad, and we assume it to be dad from season 1/2, but what if it's Philip?
the phone call that says dad is from Philip. Oh, Jesus.
I don't know about that.
What does her dad think about that?
That seems like a pretty risky thing to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's possible.
Hold a gun to your head. Do you think he's her real biological father?
No.
But there is something there.
Yeah.
there's something there because White Rose found that vulnerability and it hit home with the odd fascination he had with her last year, and then this scene, like, yeah. I don't know what it is.
But the really creepy nature of his interactions with her last season, it tells me it's not a father-daughter thing. Because he was far too creepy and, like, sexual with her, I
hate to tell you, but there are fathers out there who are that creepy and sexual with their daughters.
I guess Philip did not strike me as a creepy sexual daughter predator, but...
Because he's just a rich, above-the-laws society asshole.
He's got larger concerns than fucking his own daughter, but... Maybe I'm wrong about that, but that was not where my head went. Maybe
because
I don't fuck
up. Every rich and powerful person that's fucking their daughter or underage child probably has larger concerns they could be, and yet they do.
Probably.
So.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that's just not where my head goes.
I'm playing devil's advocate because I don't buy it either.
Yeah.
It seems a little too Star Wars-y almost.
I don't know. It's not on my radar as him being her father.
Because there's a lot of theories.
It's not
of, like,
impossible.
Like. Have you read some of the weirder theories about Tyrell's child being Elliot, a time-shifted, like, Elliot fetus? Or, like, there's some really out there parental theories.
I have, and all
theories.
Of those seem ridiculous to me.
Right.
But...
Like I said, there's some... I won't put this under the ridiculous category because there's definitely something there.
Yeah.
I don't think it's... I disagree with my partner here, and I think that Philip being creepy... towards his daughter would not necessarily be out of character for him because he just is like, I mean, he's just an amoral fucking creep.
There are a lot of amoral fucking creeps who are not incestuous sexual predators. Sure.
Yeah, yeah, right.
So
yeah.
My tendency is not to lean that way, but that's my tendency.
And then
so.
There's, like I said, there's been like outwardly moral Bible thumpers who've been all
sure.
kinds of raping their daughters. So
yeah.
It's hard to say. It's hard to say. People have the capacity to be monsters.
But now that I've
heard... It doesn't
heard
feel like it to me, though.
...those theories that some kind of relationship with his mother and recognizing perhaps a young Angela...
That's
...as
what
a grown-up Angela...
Yeah.
...could potentially be there. And I think it's very likely
and,
now that you bring it up.
And the fact that, like, Edward Alderson is to White Rose the way Angela's mother was to Philip Price... Like, they were working that same angle,
okay.
two different things for the same goal, and that was his connect. Just the yeah. way that, like, I mean, do we say it's, like, is it super creepy that White Rose has this fixation and indulgence with Elliot?
No, but we've never hypothesized that that's his son or her son.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. Like, if you take this, like, if you saw the first time White Rose laid eyes on Elliot, mm-hmm. Maybe she makes, like, this kind of shocked or intrigued, like, oh, why, this is the, uh-huh, you know? Like, and I feel like it's creepy because Philip is an old guy and Angela's a younger woman. But other than that,
yeah.
like if the exact same scene played out and it was Zhang sitting at a conference table seeing Elliot, no one would say it was creepy.
Well, nobody's hypothesizing the daughter-son connection here either
but,
with
so
Rose.
Before I hypothesize...
I think it's less creepy if you put it in that context,
yeah.
but not altogether uncreepy.
And also, to be fair, I do feel like the guy who's playing Price is playing a little creepy.
He's a little creepy, yeah.
So, like, it's not unfair either. I'm just mm-hmm. saying, like, just try to imagine an exercise where Chairman or Minister Zhang is seeing Elliot and what how you'd feel about that because...
Sure.
They've certainly set these guys up to be this parallel story that's being told in conjunction. So I kind of mm-hmm. think, yeah, that White Rose is owns the Aldersons and Philip Price feels like he owns the whatever the Angela's last name, family name is. And then we had V's email, which we already read at the top of the show, and that concludes our mailbag.
Okay.
If you'd like to send more, send it to robot@baldmove.com. Don't forget, we also have a rollicking forum thread where you can discuss the show each week with your fellow fans. And don't forget all the stuff we do at baldmove.com, and you can keep up with us on social media such as Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, @or/baldmove. One more week to go.
Yeah,
I think
finale next week.
It feels like we'll get a lot... Maybe it's just wishful thinking, a hopeful feeling, but I feel like we're going to get a lot of answers because the other thing is with 3 seasons out of 4, maybe 5, if you don't start asking, if you don't start answering questions, then
yeah,
you start talking about X-Files and Lost and the perils of shows that just continue to double down on the bigger questions and never actually get around to answering any.
Yep.
So we'll see. Much depends on next week's Red Wheelbarrow of an episode.
Indeed.
All right. We will talk to you then. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.